Welcome to Crossing the Divide, the official podcast, a grassroots, multimedia exploration of the intricacies of life in the Intermountain West. Crossing the Divide elevates local voices to educate the community on regional matters and fosters cooperative engagement in overcoming the unique challenges of life west of the Continental Divide. Not New York, not LA. Crossing the Divide is a unique tribute to life in the in-between. I'm Gretchen Reist, your guide over the divide and into the diverse terrain of Western Colorado. In this edition of Crossing the Divide's official podcast, we uncover the fascinating story of Coates Creek School on Glade Park, included on the National Register of Historic Places, and the last remaining example of a log cabin schoolhouse in the country. We'll visit with Zebulon Miracle, curator of curiosity at Gateway Canyons Resort, who fills us in on the unique history of a modest structure that housed the heart of a community and the gateway to opportunity for ranching families on the western slope. We'll also hear from Norman and Carl Rame and Judy Rame McDonald, three siblings whose personal histories intertwine with Coates Creek School and who stand at the helm of its ongoing preservation. I met with them at their annual Pancake Breakfast fundraiser to capture their stories, and their shared reminiscences are woven throughout the cast.
I enjoyed it. We always walked back and forth, me and brothers and sisters, and we enjoyed it. And winters was, it was cold, wet, but we had good heat in here. It was, had a good teacher, but it was good, but in ways that it could have been better. I didn't get what my mom always said, that I didn't get the learning that I should have got, because first year I was in town in 56, I was there a month and a half, and they sent me back from the fourth grade to the third grade. I didn't get everything up here that really, maybe other kids did, but I didn't. There was an advantage, not a whole bunch, that many kids in one grade, and another reason my sister would have had to go to town anyway if we wouldn't have moved, because just went back to the seventh grade here at that time.
Well, it was, from what I can remember, it was quite the experience for a little kid. Winters is what I remember more than anything else, because we got to play outside in the snow, making snow forts. We had a stove in here, and it was nice and warm. You get about 15, 20 people in here, and in a stove, you're warm. You would have one teacher on less students, that was the biggest thing. And there'd be two or three kids in one grade, two or three kids in another grade. So it was, you got a lot more out of it, a lot more attention. That's for sure. Yeah. And you was be able to see what the kids in the next grade above you was always, going at. Yeah, it helped out, I thought. No, I enjoyed it. I did.
That was Norman and Carl Rame, former students of Coates Creek School, sharing their experiences of attending the historic one-room schoolhouse mid-20th century. I'm joined today by Zebulon Miracle to learn more about the full history of this log cabin school building. So, Zeb, before we delve into Coates Creek School, tell us a little bit about your own personal history here in Mesa County.
So I am a Grand Junction native. I was born and raised in Grand Junction. I went away for school in Boulder and then was offered a job at the Museum of Western Colorado. So I came back, and there I worked my way up to where I was the curator of anthropology and the collections manager and a local historian. And about 4 years ago, Gateway gave me the opportunity to start a full-time education department down there. So now I take care of educational programming in Gateway. But I really love that I get to have people from all over the world come here to Mesa County and learn about the cultural and scientific resources that we have out here. So now I have this large megaphone to people from a huge diversity of backgrounds and locations, and I get to tell them what makes this area so cool and unique.
So we're talking today about the Coates Creek School, which is a one-room schoolhouse up on Glade Park. Do you have a personal history or connection with that area by chance?
I have a personal connection to Glade Park in general. So my family moved from Kentucky to Glade Park in the 1920s. There's a number of miracles that homesteaded in Glade Park. There's even a Miracle Ridge there. And the Glade Park Cemetery is filled with headstones that read miracle. So a lot of my family was from up there. A lot of my direct family moved off of Glade Park around World War II, but I remember growing up, going up there with my grandfather, and he would tell me about everyone who lived up there and stories of him growing up there. So Glade Park has always had a very special place in my heart.
What was it that drew your family from Kentucky to that area?
One of the things that drew my family from Kentucky to Glade Park is a story that we see common in the West, and that's health issues, especially issues with the lungs. And so coming out here, they found a drier climate. They found that high altitude was believed to really help with lung issues. So it was my great-great-grandmother who had lung issues. And so she found the Fruita Church was offering out assistance for families to move out to Western Colorado. And so they were attached with that and eventually homesteaded in the area. They were used to farming in Kentucky, which is a lot different than farming here in the arid West. And so I can't really say they were very successful at their endeavors at farming and ranching, but they did everything they could to survive. And then eventually World War II came, and that had that entire generation go off to war. And when they came back, they had a whole new set of opportunities.
Norman and Judy provided me some insight into what life was like growing up on a ranch in Glade Park. So let's take a listen to the picture they paint about their childhood and the difficulties they faced after circumstances forced their move to Grand Junction.
So my folks had to work to survive, but I think it was made the family tighter. We've always been tight. My dad raised hay, and we helped put up the hay, and Dad raised potatoes, and we helped sack up potatoes. I enjoyed it. We learned how to live right. Nowadays, everything's give to them. It's not. We had to work for it. We raised cattle at that time, and we did not eat that much beef because we had to sell them. For clothing, buy clothing for the family and food. My mom raised a big garden, and she done a lot of canning. Me and my wife still can. We do a lot of canning.
It was very simple and carefree. We used to hear a car coming down the road, which was miles away. That's how quiet it was up here. There was hardly no noise at all. It was great. We had any kind of pet we wanted, and dogs especially. It was a very good life. It was. Yes, and we were so free, and we really checked in at breakfast and supper. But I explored closer to home. We had a wash, a dry wash, and we played in it a great deal. And we even had trees that was our playhouse, and tin cans for our pots and pans and dishes, and it, very simple life. I can remember playing in the ditch and getting in very big trouble.
What prompted the move to Grand Junction?
I think it was more trying to feed two families on one ranch, and the ranch was just small enough it would not support two families. My mom felt like, you know, with the big family, Daddy was younger, he could work in Grand Junction, and later she also worked to support the family, so it was help.
What kind of work did they do? Do you recall?
Oh, minimum wage type work. My dad worked in a garage, and my mother went to work. First, she went to work in the peach packing sheds, and then later she went back to beautician work. She worked for a lady on Main Street. Yes. I think that's all they did at that time, yes. So,
was it a difficult transition for you, having lived up in Glade Park, then to move down to Grand Junction?
Yes. My biggest problem was I didn't know anyone. I just did not know anyone, and I was so used to being around people that I knew. That was probably the hardest part for me, other than the fact that the whole family got sick when we moved to town because we weren't around so many people, and they seemed to have chicken pox and measles and mumps, and we didn't have those things.
That's interesting.
We were isolated. Yeah, it was kind of devastating. They would have a house full of sick children. There was 8, 10 with mom and dad, yes.
So how did life change for you once you moved down to Grand Junction?
It just felt, we felt like outcasts, really. These hillbillies come down here to go to school with us. That's what we felt like. First couple of years it was for all of us. It was spooky, really. That was another thing that caused me to have problems in school. Because I was 20-some kids in one grade. And it's just, I was the outcast. That's why I was up here every weekend to my grandparents. I missed it for a long, long time.
We had a hard time disconnecting from this type of life. And we were up here every chance we got. We even camped out. We spent the whole weekend camping out, and it was something we just didn't give up easily.
Zeb, you had family up in the Glade Park area, or sure, previously, former generations. Is it an area that you really familiarized yourself with?
Growing up, my grandfather would take us up there, and he'd point out where he lived, where his father lived. We would drive back to places like Miracle Rock, which is not named after my family. It truly is a miraculous feature if you've never seen that. One of my fondest memories of growing up is every year we'd go up on top of Glade Park, up to Pinyon Mesa, and cut down a Christmas tree. And so memories of that. So Glade Park, between camping trips and looking for Christmas trees and just taking day trips and learning about my family heritage, yeah, Glade Park became something very near and dear. So I was able to learn about the area that way. And then understanding the history of Grand Junction and Mesa County, Glade Park plays a vital role in that.
Did any of your relatives have any connection to the Coates Creek School?
Not as far as I know, sadly. My grandfather is somebody that I really admire. He was born in 1926, right when the Coates Creek School opened at its current location. As far as I can gather, remembering trips with my grandfather, he completed maybe 8th grade. This is at a time when they were busy. They were out there working, trying to figure out any way to get through. If you do the math on that, if he was born in 26 and if he was in about 8th grade, that would have been during the heart of the Depression, that he would have had to go and find work on another ranch and take different odd jobs. So sadly, education wasn't really something that they were able to do at that time, but a lot of other families at Glade Park did.
Can you give us a little bit of background on the school, when it was built, some of the history surrounding it?
Absolutely. And when we talk about the schools on Glade Park, it can get a little confusing. We have schoolhouses that go by the same name that have moved many times. You have schoolhouses that are maybe the second building built in that location. So tracing the history of the schools on Glade Park, or really we see this in a lot of rural areas in the West, can be a little difficult. Schools at this time, your one-room log cabin, your one-room school, they're designed to be moved around. So schools are made in these rural ranching communities and farming communities so that you can move it as the family moves, as the population center moves. So Coates Creek is an excellent example of that. The first Coates Creek School started in 1915 in a location not where the current building is today. The second school, what you see today, was built in 1919, and it was built by a man named Elwood Bruce. Bruce built this building, this school, and it eventually got moved. By 1926, it was moved a mile and a half southwest to its current location. So this school lasts for about 42 years. They stopped teaching in that school in 1971. But one of the most fascinating facts that I came across is that from 1957 all the way to 1971, Coates Creek was the only School District 51 school in operation on all of Glade Park. Glade Park goes from having maybe a half dozen schools at one point to, by 1957, Coates Creek is the last to remain, and it remains like that for a large number of years. 14 years, Coates Creek is the only school on Glade Park.
And I assume that would have something to do with what you were talking about, the onset of World War II and things just changing.
Absolutely. So Glade Park gets its first schools around 1910. And during that time, there are only two schools. There's what's called the East End School and the West End School. And eventually these schools grow and grow. Eventually we get several more small schools. By 1932, there are 155 students on Glade Park, and that was the peak. So 1932, 155 pupils are being taught in Glade Park. Now, things get a little complex with different school districts. In 1914, School District 41 is formed, and with four different schools, including the Coates Creek School and its original location. In 1951, School District 41 folds into School District 51. And it's around 1951 that we start seeing a lot of these other schools begin to close down. So, for example, the famous Pipeline School, which is what you see right near the Glade Park store, what's now a community center, that's the last year that they taught. But again, Coates Creek was able to hang on for quite a while, all through the 60s and clear into the 1970s.
You did mention that the style of the school is more of a log cabin type, which, when I first saw it, wasn't what I had pictured in my head of the typical one-room schoolhouse. Now, you mentioned that they were kind of built to be moved. So was that a typical style for schoolhouses out west during that time period?
What you see at Coates Creek is very typical for the time period, but one of the reasons why Coates Creek is so important today, one of the reasons why it's on the National Register of Historic Places, is because, as far as we can tell, the Coates Creek that you see when you drive down there is the last remaining example of a log one-room schoolhouse. The Pipeline School, which is near the Glade Park Community Center, that is actually a framed building. That's not your typical log cabin style or your log construction style that Coates Creek is. So its building style is a little unique compared to the other schools that we have around. It's a very old style. And this was really common in the rural West and in ranching and farming communities. Populations move, and so the school moves with those populations. Education was really heavily valued by early settlers. We see this all over the West. We see this all over North America. Families really go through tremendous sacrifices to make sure that their students can go to school. And so to have a school right next to your house, to have a school next to your population center, is vital. In the case of Coates Creek, remember, that was built in 1919 at a different location. It was moved in 1926 to its current location because the road moved. And so instead of making children move away from the road, they simply moved the school. So rural communities with these log schoolrooms, these log schoolhouses, there's no permanent foundation, there's no hard wiring, there's no plumbing. They're designed to be moved around. Dr. Andrew Goliford, a professor down at Fort Lewis in Durango, he wrote a book on one-room schools, and he tells the story about a school in Wyoming that was moved so many times that all the components had numbers, because they assumed we're just going to have to move this again in the future. Let's make it easy the next time. And that buildings have been moved countless times. And so Coates Creek shows us that architectural style, it's a very rustic, it's a very simple architecture, it's designed to be moved. It talks about how communities move. But then once Coates Creek sticks around for a while, then we start seeing the introduction of electricity in the 1950s. A cistern is built in the late 40s so that they can put a little pump and have water in there. Now that the schoolhouse has been there for a number of years, we start putting in things like wood stoves so that the teachers can cook hot meals for the students. All that comes later once they're sure that this is going to be where it actually stays. And that's in huge contrast, again, to the Pipeline School north of the community center, or what is now the community center north of the store. That is definitely designed to be there for a long time. So we can see two different ways of building schoolhouses.
Oftentimes, with some of these older buildings, particularly with the school buildings, they would serve multiple purposes, often would double as a church. Was that true with Coates Creek as well? Was it sort of a center of the community there?
Oh, schoolhouses have always done more than just provide a place for education. Schoolhouses have always been a center of community, especially when you get back into a place like Coates Creek. We have this tendency to talk about Glade Park, and we think of Glade Park as being this tiny, tiny area, like a city, something compact, when in reality, Glade Park spreads for miles upon miles upon miles. And so when you are clear back right next to that Colorado-Utah state line, actually on Coates Creek, you need your own community center. You're not going the 16 or so miles away to what's now the Glade Park store. And so Coates Creek as a school, you're absolutely right. They did dances there. It was where you went to vote. They offered church services there from 1971 to 1985. And it's always just been this hub of the community in the area. It's even where you went in World War II to get your registration cards for rationing stamps. And so these are all purposes above and beyond just education. This is the entire community center.
The building itself was still being used after it was shut down as a school. I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Coates Creek ceases to become a school in 1971. After 1971, School District 51 starts busing students away. And the building is still there, and it's still in great shape. So from 1971 all the way to 1985, it's used as a church and Sunday school. In 1988, major restoration happened at the building. They put in the current flagpole and some signs, but it's still a community center today, and there's still an annual celebration. It's still used by people that either have a connection from the past or that still live in that area.
Now, at what point did it become listed on the National Register of Historic Places?
So starting in 1988, some of the alumni of the Coates Creek School began to really take an interest in preserving the building, making sure that the building and its story lasted longer and so that future generations can understand that complete effort and dedication toward education. And so beginning in the late 80s and into the early 90s, there was a big push to make sure that the building stayed in a state that could still be used today, and today the building is still standing. But there was also a push to put that building, along with the Pipeline School, on the National Register of Historic Places. And this is a major, major process to go through. To get on the National Register of Historic Places, you have to show that your building meets certain criteria. Either it's connected to a significant person or a significant time period or a significant idea. And Coates Creek and the Pipeline School get on the National Register because they show this need for education, this desire, this sacrifice for education that communities are willing to make. And it also shows how schoolhouses became community centers. So Coates Creek and Pipeline are both used as community centers long, long, long after the last classes were held there.
Many of the people I spoke with at the pancake breakfast were somewhat disappointed that a lot of the things that are in the school now are not original to the building, and that a lot of the original stuff has disappeared. Here's Judy talking about that.
We're missing quite a few things. The original stove, heating stove, is no longer here. The cloakroom used to have hooks for jackets and lunch bags and things of that nature. They're all gone. There was a bell and desk. There was quite a few desks that are missing.
There are a number of stoves here, and none of those are original to the building. Is that correct?
That's correct. They are not. These are cook stoves. And they're not, they've all been donated by ranchers in the area. And believe one of them is like 125 years old. And the other ones are maybe closer to 80, but they're all older than I am.
Absolutely. And it is very, very hard to find a building that has all original material in it. When Pipeline ceased becoming a school in 1971, I'm sure a lot of material left. When it ceased being a church in 1985, I'm sure a lot of material left. Since then, though, even though we don't have the original material, we can still tell a story. Even if it's not the original stove that's there, it tells you that people wanted a stove to still be there because that building is still in use. So even though it's not the original one from 1919 or 1926 when they moved the building, it still harkens to this idea that it's in use today. That's one of the interesting things when we talk about historic structures is we like things as historic preservationists to be original. But I also like walking in and seeing that brand new improvements have been done to a place because to me, that shows that the building is still alive and still being used. Historic preservation in my mind doesn't mean that it just stays in a time capsule and it doesn't change for 100 years. Instead, historic preservation to me also incorporates this idea that it's being used today. So I'm perfectly fine with seeing new stoves in there. I'm perfectly fine with seeing, you know, new sinks and the building is still alive, and so its story still continues.
And that's the nice thing about this group that is working on the preservation is that their intention is not just to keep the building standing. They are trying to find new uses for it as well.
Let's listen to what Carl and Judy have to say about their mission.
Why is it important to you to keep the Coates Creek School standing?
Well, there's very few of these old log schoolhouses around here or in the United States or even Colorado. This one's still in pretty good shape. And so, yeah, it's important for everybody, not just me. It's for my kids and grandkids and everybody else.
Not having attended school here, why do you feel so passionate about making sure that the building remains standing?
Just a sense of community, because this is a very nice building to have a wedding in, a birthday party, just to get together. We've had birthdays here, big birthdays. We've had anniversaries here, and we've tried to let the community know that this building is for community use. Any resident that lives on Glade Park, we would like to have them feel free to contact one of us if they're going to have a party, a use for this building. And we know a lot of people come and take pictures on the swings because the swings are original as well. And there are so many children, they just love the idea of those swings. So it's very nice, yes.
Is it important to you that future generations can come here and have an understanding of what life was like back when you were growing up?
Yes, it would be very nice if they would appreciate the effort that we have put into keeping it for them. Because it's for them. Right now we're enjoying it, but later it's, of course, for them. It would be very nice if they appreciated what we've done. I believe that one of the first things that were done, and I wasn't in the group that did it, they replaced the front step with a step that is wheelchair friendly, with concrete and a nice new step. And then there was logs to the south that had some wood rot, and they were replaced. More recently, we have replaced logs to the west under the window because the window was having problems. We couldn't open it or anything. We replaced it. we replaced one of the logs in the roof. We took out the ceiling, the low ceiling, and opened it up, and it has made all the difference in the light and everything. We have a fan in here. We would not have been able to put the fan in here to circulate heat if we hadn't. And what else have we done? We put a cistern in because the old cistern had collapsed. And now we have water available all the time. Even in the winter, we have come up here and used water from the cistern. That's a big help. Our next project is going to be the floors, because the floors do need sanded. They have some really rough spots in them. We need to have them sanded. We don't think that we're going to finish them to the point of high gloss, but we would very much like to get all the rough spots out of them and make them look, yes, and put a coat on them so they don't wear so hard. They're wearing very hard, so that's our next project, is our floors.
Absolutely, and so the story of Coates Creek isn't finished yet. We do have some historic properties where its story is, I don't want to say it's completely over, but the reason for it having significance has maybe ended. So, for example, here in town we have Cross Orchard's historic site. That's an apple orchard, and the story that the museum tries to tell at Cross Orchards is the story of the early orchard days, and so we want things to stay there. That's the beginning and the end. But Coates Creek is still alive, so where do you go through and stop modernizing the building? And I don't think you do right now, because the story of Coates Creek is the story of community, and that community is still there. So absolutely, I'm encouraged and happy that things are underway to make sure that it stays alive. Even if it's not the stove from 1920, I don't care about that. What I care about is people are still using the building in a traditional use, and you can still see the historic building, though. You can still see those hand-cut logs that were used to make it. You can still see the foundation. You can still see the playground equipment the kids played on for over half a century. But it's not dead. It's very much alive, just like the community of Glade Park is very much alive.
Our local PBS producer in residence at CMU, Dan Garrison, is finalizing a piece on the sheep and cattle wars. And obviously, the area around Glade Park, big ranching area. So I was curious if Glade Park and this school, that area, plays into what the sheep and cattle wars were. It's not something I know anything about at this point.
Sure. So when we talk about the sheep and cattle wars, it helps to have a basic understanding of the history of that area. The first ranches in Glade Park came in around 1883. By comparison, the first pioneers into Western Colorado came in 1881. So this is early in our history. And these are large cattle ranches. And sheep are first introduced around 1908. And what the sheep and cattle war really revolve around is this shared use of land between cattle interest and sheep interest. And it is very difficult to do, especially out here in a very arid environment. We don't have a lot of vegetation per acre. We have a lot of acres of land, but we don't have a lot of vegetation per acre. And during the 1890s into the 19-teens, clear into the mid-1930s, there is fierce competition for uses of land between cattlemen and sheepmen. And this could at times turn bloody. And some of that actually happened on Glade Park. Sometimes on Glade Park, we had where cattle interests and sheep interests really could not get along. And at times it turned to very gory, graphic, bloody events, as Dan will talk about in his upcoming piece. And so Glade Park was one of the places where the sheep and cattle war plays out. Now, after the Taylor Grazing Act is passed in the 1930s, this act basically makes it to where uses of grazing on public land is regulated in the system that we have today. After that, we start seeing both sheep and cattle on the same ranches. So eventually the cattlemen ended up adopting sheep into their style. And so Glade Park actually has some of our largest sheep ranches that come after the Taylor Grazing Act is passed. And so, yes, by all means, the sheep and cattle wars definitely affects Glade Park. And areas like Coates Creek, while I don't have anything directly tied to Coates Creek, Coates Creek is a school during this time. I'm sure that when the community was gathering at Coates Creek for dances or for meetings or to talk about community business, I'm sure the issue of sheep and cattle was being brought up in that building. As a historian, especially as a historian of Grand Junction and Mesa County history, I love sharing stories, I love sharing places, I love sharing ideas. But one of the last things that I want to do is have like a magician mentality where all that I do is hidden behind the curtains and not share how I did that trick. So what I really hope that people get out of this podcast, besides some great stories and great information, I hope I can inspire people to look on their own. So if you're interested in the history of Glade Park schools, there's a couple of great resources for you. In the archives at the Mesa County Public Library is a book called History of Glade Park Schools. It was written by a woman named Eleanor Seeley in the late 1980s. And this book is absolutely fascinating. It's only about 30 pages, but there are photographs that I had never seen of these early schools, including Coates Creek and of the very first original Coates Creek. And I love historic photographs. I love seeing the looks on these children's faces. I love seeing the teachers who are out there working really hard. And so I highly encourage people to look at that publication. In addition, the Museums of Western Colorado and the library, starting in the 1970s, did a major oral history project. And one of my favorite oral histories that you can get online, all that you need to do is go to the Mesa County Library website and look for this. It's by a teacher by the name of Eva Wood Leslie. Eva Wood Leslie. And she actually taught at the Coates Creek School for a while. And so to listen to her remember what it was like to be a teacher there, to be one of the first teachers at Coates Creek in its current location, it's absolutely fascinating. She talks about making about $60 a month her first year, $60 a year her first year teaching, and then she got a bump up to $70 a year. And she talks about living at a neighboring ranch and how the rancher was nice enough after a snowstorm to go through and beat down a trail so that she could walk from the ranch house to the school without getting her skirt wet. And you can find a number of stories of Glade Park, of early schools, of Mesa County history in general. And so I really hope that we can inspire people to go out because these stories are captured and they're here for you to look at. And these histories have been written. But at the same time, we need to continue that. So if you have stories of living at Coates Creek, if you have stories of being on Glade Park, 1971 was last year Coates Creek was a school. I guarantee somebody listening to this podcast was alive during that time and probably went to Coates Creek. So if you have a connection, we need to keep these stories going. History doesn't stop. And so please let us know what life was like and please go out and look for these stories. There's a number of great resources out there for you. Coates Creek is a really magical place that's easily accessible. I would venture to guess that most people in Mesa County have not been back to Coates Creek, but it's a really fun drive. It's an easy drive. During the non-wet months, you can drive it in any passenger car, but it's going to get you into a side of Glade Park that you've rarely seen. I'd imagine many people haven't been to Glade Park and even fewer have been past the Glade Park School. Maybe some have ventured to Miracle Rock, but to actually go back to Coates Creek, it's a magical experience. It shows you what ranching was like historically and how those trends continue today. It's a very traditional landscape. And so I'd really love to see Coates Creek be an area that people feel comfortable going and exploring it. And there's great signs there. Coates Creek as a community has done an excellent job keeping their histories alive. So I'm really, really pleased with the work done at Coates Creek. For historic buildings in general, one of the hard things about history is you have to not just preserve and tell and research, but there's that so what factor to it. Why do we care about the Avalon Theater? Why do we care about Coates Creek? Why do we care about the Aspinall Building downtown? Those are all buildings on the National Register, and the reason why they're on the National Register is because people have taken time to add that so what aspect. So when we're talking about historic properties, it's important that we realize its overall context. It's important that we realize its purpose, and it's important that we answer that question, why is this important? Why does this go beyond just being an old pile of logs that a couple of kids met into a, no, this is a center of community? So my hope for historic buildings in general is that we constantly answer that so what answer or question.
And I will say, having spoken with a number of the people who are involved in the preservation, they are mostly people who have some type of connection.
Mm-hmm.
And they are concerned that their numbers are dwindling.
Absolutely.
And so it is important, too, to get that next generation of people on board with continuing that into the future.
Judy speaks to that in this last clip.
We're just a loose-knit bunch of friends that we really get up here and we really get to enjoying it. We enjoy it way too much because then we talk and forget to fry eggs. But we do. We do enjoy it, or we wouldn't do it year after year. But we've all become friends and we enjoy our time together. So far we have volunteers on one side of the one family member has a whole lot of volunteers. And I don't seem to have any volunteers. Yeah.
They don't have that connection, maybe.
I'm thinking they don't because they like it. They enjoy it. But, you know, Mom, that's your thing. But hopefully we just keep talking to every young person we meet that shows an interest, and hopefully we're going to get the next generation started before we get so decrepitated, that we can't stand for hours and cook.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned, Coates Creek's story hasn't ended yet. Coates Creek is still a community center. It's still a place where you can go and understand Glade Park history. But that is on the timeline that we assign to it. That'll stop being that hub of a community. That'll stop having a story when we decide that. And so it is in our interest, not just as connections to Glade Park and Coates Creek, but it's in our interest of residents of Mesa County and Western Colorado and Colorado in general that we keep that story alive so that we can remember the hardships, the difficulties, the sacrifices that people went through to make education possible for their future. Because having our children have a better future than us, I think, is such a common, almost primal urge that we have. And I think places like Coates Creek help us remember a lot of people sacrificed for that to happen. And now we need to remember that and keep it alive and keep that story moving forward.
Zeb, thank you so much for being here today. I'm hopeful that we have helped to inspire that next generation, instill in them the importance of keeping these historic treasures relevant now and into the future.
That ends another edition of Crossing the Divide, made possible by support from Rocky Mountain PBS, Mesa County Libraries, and the Daily Sentinel. Thanks for tuning in. Want to find out more about contributing to the preservation of Coates Creek School, or have personal memories about Coates Creek you'd like to share? Message us on Facebook or Instagram at Crossing the Divide, and give us a follow to keep apprised of new podcast releases and other events. To learn more about the history of ranching in Colorado, don't miss the upcoming premiere of Colorado Experiences, Sheep and Cattle Wars, Wednesday, December 5th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Museum of the West. For more information, call 970-245-1818. And tune into this podcast next month for a conversation with Kathy Badle of Roan Creek Ranch to learn about the challenges of ranching in the 21st century and local efforts to preserve this Western legacy for future generations. Crossing the Divide, Cultivating Community Through Conversation.